This is the primal scream of a dying regime.
Pray for our enemies, because we're going medieval on these people. Putin's not got a free shot. All these networks lying about the people. The people have had a belly full of it. I know you don't like hearing that. I know you try to do everything in the world to stop that, but you're not going to stop it. It's going to happen.
And where do people like that go to share the big lie? MAGA Media. I wish, in my soul, I wish that any of these people had a conscience.
Ask yourself, what is my task and what is my purpose? If that answer is to save my country, this country will be saved.
War Room. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
The Chinese-owned app could be giving American data to the Chinese government. NBC News correspondent Savannah Sellers has the latest.
That more than 150 million Americans are on TikTok.
Ahead of an expected grilling on Capitol Hill, TikTok CEO Shou Chu using the platform to directly appeal to its millions of viewers.
Some politicians have started talking about banning.
In prepared remarks, Chu plans to highlight TikTok's massive reach while also addressing concerns about safety and security, saying TikTok will firewall protected U.S. user data from unauthorized foreign access and will not be manipulated by any government. On Wednesday, TikTok creators descending on the Capitol, flown in by the company.
They flew us first class.
To explain what a potential ban could mean for them and other users.
Tell me what it would mean if TikTok went away for you, for your life.
Well, I'd be so sad if that went away. And I hope it don't happen.
At issue, TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, and its ties to China. Some critics fear the Chinese government might get access to user data or use the app to spread misinformation. Today's hearing comes amid the backdrop of the Biden administration's recent ultimatum to ByteDance, sell its stake in TikTok or face a U.S. ban, and a Justice Department investigation into a claim the company illegally surveilled journalists, for which TikTok says three employees have been fired.
We need to ask some questions. I don't trust what they've been telling us.
For Jason Linton, whose videos on adoption and foster care have nearly 13 million followers, it's changed his life.
TikTok has built us a community that we can share so much of those emotions, so much of those moments, so much of the pains. We can share it and we can just encourage one another.
For me, the most interesting thing is the privacy issue, in that one of the things that came out in this testimony is that TikTok is on 150 million phones. That's a lot of data. And as somebody, you know, the number one thing I worked on at Facebook was internal data access controls. That was hard enough without my employees being under the physical control of the People's Republic of China. And so, you know, most of TikTok's code comes from Beijing. It's extremely difficult for them to give any kind of guarantee as to the safety of U.S. data as long as that's happening.
And so Chu, Mr. Chu, the CEO of TikTok, has said, not only do we not give data to the Chinese government has never asked us for the data. Do you believe him when he says that?
I don't. So first, we already have proof that Chinese employees of ByteDance were able to access TikTok's data to find out information about a journalist who was writing critical stories about TikTok, right? So there was already an example of that. Now, that's not necessarily driven by the government, but the exact same functionality that would allow them to get in there. The other issue he's going to have is that over the last couple of years, we've seen a massive crackdown on tech companies in China. President Xi is the most powerful premier and general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party since Mao. He has a third term, which has not happened since Mao, and he has been consolidating power. And in doing so, he has put really powerful tech CEOs in jail. Jack Ma of Alibaba. Right now, as we speak, the largest tech banker in China has disappeared. Nobody knows where he is. And so it's very difficult for them to make the argument in a situation where that kind of power has been demonstrated by the Chinese security services that they would be able to resist any requests from the Chinese government.
So TikTok having 100 million Americans' data, what does that mean? What could they do with it that could be harmful?
Right. So when you think about Chinese surveillance, you have to look at the big picture. And what the Chinese intelligence services have gotten really good at is taking big chunks of data about Americans and then putting them together in useful ways. So they broke into Experian and they stole all this data on Americans' credit profiles. They broke into Anthem, one of the largest healthcare providers, including healthcare to the U.S. government employees. They broke into the Sabre system, which is airplane reservations. They broke into Starwood to get the passports of people who are staying in hotels around the world. And then they broke into the Office of Personnel Management and stole the classification records of over 20 million American employees with U.S. employees with clearances. You put all that together and you can build kind of knowledge about the entire life of these people who work in classified positions. And that is an incredibly powerful functionality when you have it all together. And so TikTok by itself, yes, that data is probably not incredibly valuable. But when you combine it with all of this other of these other things, and they have not stopped in that hacking campaign, they continue to go after large holders of data on American citizens. When you put that all together, there's a huge number of questions that their intelligence services are able to answer when they have them about American citizens, perhaps for counterintelligence purposes, but also to understand what's going on in America and to, possibly in the long run, to manipulate political sentiment, which is one of the bigger concerns about TikTok these days.
There are a whole bunch of experts who pointed out, okay, you want to ban TikTok? Do that. Go ahead. It's no longer available in the United States of America. But there are a whole bunch of other companies. There are a whole bunch of other apps that are effectively doing the same thing.
That's right. Yeah. This is the funny thing is we don't really have a law in the United States that controls what data can you move to China. We do not have a privacy law in the United States. The rest of the developed world has come up with federal privacy laws or privacy laws that control what can you do with data, where can it go, who can access it. And so I think that is the missed opportunity here is, yes, we can squish TikTok and, everybody can pat each other on the back for this bipartisan consensus. But in the end, there are hundreds of Chinese games, mobile apps, discussion forums, social media apps. There are dozens and dozens of potential TikToks out there. And just destroying TikTok does nothing to set a standard for how do we want companies to deal with data. So I think, yes, let's talk about TikTok, but let's use it as an example of why we need a federal privacy law to control the behavior of both American and Chinese companies.
The greatest existential threat this nation's ever faced, the Chinese Communist Party. This is unrestricted warfare. And today we're going to be breaking down the interlocking and interconnecting aspects of big tech and big finance and, of course, the national security state and why no one's doing anything about it. There's a hearing today. Up on my Getter page right now, we're going to run a simultaneous run by Grace and Mo and Jane Zirkel of the TikTok hearing. We've also got our own Natalie Winters. She's focused on it to do polls for us. That's how important this is to get to the bottom of all this. By the way, breaking news. Looks like the Manhattan surprise. Wait for it. Manhattan DA's, and I hate taking any time on this. Not meeting today, and the grand jury will meet next week. We'll have more details on that later in the show. So that's off the table for right now. As the vultures swarm and everything else. Remember, the only way, their last best hope is to try to stop Trump with prison. Not going to work. Okay, MAGA ascended. Just remember that MAGA ascended. One of the reasons. This, they never wanted this day to come, the CCP. And half the people you're going to see, running for, we got to get rid of TikTok, have either been on the payroll or in association with the CCP. Had this group last night, the Hill and Valley group, met, from people from Capitol Hill and Peter Thiel was there. It's all fine. But, one-third of these companies in Silicon Valley Bank were CCP companies. And Sequoia Capital is all over. Sequoia Capital is the biggest player in Silicon Valley, and they are a total front for the Chinese Communist Party. Let me repeat that. They're a total front for the Chinese Communist Party. It is this bacillus is in our financial system. It's one of the reasons Silicon Valley Bank got bailed out. Oh, by the way, just a note, and we'll talk about this later when Cortez comes on at 11. Bank of England has notified us that they warned the Fed about Silicon Valley Bank over a year ago, the potential insolvency of Silicon Valley Bank. That thing is a festering sore, and we're going to get all the pus out of it so that the people that are underwriting the bailout, that would be you, the American taxpayer, and MAGA, get a full frontal, as we say. Dr. Peter Navarro, first off, I want to give your assessment. You and I fought this one from day one, right, with all the CCP collaborators in the White House and in the administration. Yes, there were. These Wall Street guys were the worst. In the book by Josh Rogan called Chaos Under Heaven, the war between Xi and President Trump about the war, Peter Navarro and I were proudly in the Super Hawks, which don't believe the Chinese Communist Party is a legitimate government of the Chinese people. That makes us different. Ain't never happened in American history you've had a group of officials in the White House to do this and to say, no, you can't be a hardliner, you can't be a realist, you can't be accommodationist. That's all not going to work. This is not about competition. They're not a peer competitor. They're a mortal enemy to the Chinese people. And we put them in place. We put them in place. It was the communists in the State Department, in the Defense Department, in the War Department, all of them, that put these guys in place after the end of World War II, after the Lao Beijing had 35 million dead fighting the Japanese or fighting each other, because Chiang Kai-shek and Mao spent more time fighting each other. General Stilwell tried to get him to fight the Japanese. Peter, I want your thoughts on TikTok, why this is so big, because it cuts to the heart of this of the money coming through, and they're making money hand over fist. By the way, just understand this. 150 million Americans. Now, that is half the nation, almost half the nation. And trust me, it's 90% of the nation under 35 years old. Matt Gaetz told me in this very room you're sitting here back in July that that the 100 seats for 100 years was not going to happen because we were going to lose 25 or 30 seats by 1,000 votes because of TikTok, on the college campuses. He called it back in July. This has been a weapon for the Chinese Communist Party. Peter Navarro, your thoughts.
Steve, as many TikTok subscribers as you had, we could have at least strangled that teenager in its crib back in the Trump administration. I actually wrote extensively in the Taking Back Trump's America book a whole chapter on my TikTok moment. It was one of my biggest failures in the White House. It started, I don't know if you know this, Steve, but the whole ban on TikTok thing started with Indra Modi in India. When China invaded India, Modi had the courage to ban every single Chinese app. So like the next day, the boss goes, wow, okay. And it set in motion a thing. And I got very involved with the National Security Council, writing the executive order that would have done it. And sure enough, Larry Kudlow, yes, and Steve Mnuchin basically talked the boss out of doing it at the time. And we, you know, that again, then I reprised that in the podcast and Substack this week in an episode. People can read that. You know, the punchline is there's just a dizzying array of economic and national security threats posed by these Chinese apps. If we had had the courage at the time when I was in the White House to ban all Chinese apps, that would have been a great blow against the evil CCP.
Modi is a real ally. This guy gets it. People that trash talk the Indians and trash talk Modi.
Well, they've been invaded twice, Steve. He's not perfect. Let's not forget. Yes. Communist China invaded India twice, and the first time they grabbed a significant portion of Indian territory that they're still hanging on to. So there's a lot of animus between the two. I mean, they're a billion plus each.
We need to pull down. We need to pull down all these CCP, oriented apps need to be pulled down. Okay, starting with TikTok. Yeah. You can't sell it. Crush it. Pull it. Okay. It's real quick. I'm going to keep you through the break. I know you got a punch.
Yeah.
About another collaborator, Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Elon Musk is in bed up to his neck with the Chinese Communist Party. Tell me about the New York Times, Elon Musk, and Peter Navarro this week.
Yeah, the way New York Times works, they do propaganda. They had a lead editorial that basically says, go soft on China. I took them to task in yesterday's podcast in the Substack. I put it up on Getter and Twitter and True Social. And I checked last night, and Twitter had erased it, totally canceled it. So Elon Musk, you still got your friggin' bots there working on words that they basically, anything against the CCP or even the New York Times, apparently, they cleanse. And that's got to stop. PeterNavarro.substack.com. PeterNavarro.substack.com. I'll hang on, Steve, if you want.
No, Peter, you can bunt. We got it. I'll do a diatribe on this. I want to say you're the only two individuals in the history of this republic fully sanctioned by the Chinese Communist Party and held in contempt by criminal contempt by Congress. Peter Navarro, honored to have you on here, brother. Short break. Back in a moment.
Start with OpenAI, because OpenAI was founded in part out of a fear that artificial general intelligence, or sort of superhuman intelligence, shouldn't be in the hands of any one company and was perhaps coming faster than we think.
Like, it's coming soon enough and it's a big enough deal that I think we need to think right now about how we want this deployed, how everyone gets to benefit from it, how we're going to govern it, how we're going to make it safe and sort of good for humanity.
But you do believe that AI can supersede human intelligence?
I believe it absolutely will. There's a big debate about time frames. I think it takes like unique human arrogance to believe that AI cannot supersede humans.
But what about that scares you?
So many things, right? Like, this is like, you know, what does it mean to build something that is more capable than ourselves? Like, what does that say about our humanity? What's that world going to look like? What's our place in that world?
I sort of think about it as there's one ESCA where we are at the tip, where it's now about deployment, diffusion, mainstream. The internet maybe took 30 years, maybe the cloud and mobile took 15 years, and now I think we're talking months. We think of both the unintended consequences and the benefits both being something that we harness. We started the work with OpenAI, I would say, 3.5 years ago, when we started building the AI supercomputer in Azure to train these large models. And when you look at GPT-3 to 3.5 to what's coming, these are non-linear developments. So they're showing emergent capability.
The unveiling of the first instance of GPT-4 outside of OpenAI was actually to you.
Because we're just at the start of this, you could almost call it a mania, like the internet mania. So I think education is the most interesting application. I think health is the second most interesting. I think over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, we will think of learning and how you can be helped in your learning in a very different way than just looking at material.
Do you think AGI eventually subsumes us? Are we, is biology just a bootloader for a future machine intelligence?
Certainly the future will be like, and what humans do and how we spend our time and, you know, what is made available to us will be really quite different. But that's been the case for a kind of like life before and after every technological revolution in history, which I think means some version of a merge, at least for some of us. I do suspect that even if we think like the merge is good and a lot of people are going to do that really long term, there will be many people who don't want to. I think human drives will sort of be remarkably the same as they have been for tens of thousands of years. And there will be like, I don't know, maybe it's like an exclusion zone or something where if you want to like, you know, live the like no AGI life on Earth, you do that.
People should be happy that we're a little bit scared of this. I think people should be
happy. A little bit scared.
A little bit, yeah,
you personally.
I think if I said I were not, you should either not trust me or be very unhappy I'm in this job.
So what is the worst possible outcome?
There's like a set of very bad outcomes. One thing I'm particularly worried about is that these models could be used for large-scale disinformation. I am worried that these systems, now that they're getting better at writing computer code, could be used for offensive cyber attacks.
Would you push a button to stop this if it meant there was a 5% chance it would be the end of the world?
I would push a button to slow it down. And in fact, I think we will need to figure out ways to slow down this technology over time.
Okay, Joe Allen. Joe, what have we just seen there? Walk me through this, because this is inextricably linked with the Chinese Communist Party, and the Chinese Communist Party now pushed to become a hegemon because we're in it now. And this is one of the substrates that people have to understand as we get drawn into this potential kinetic war, the inextricably linked nature of artificial intelligence and where we're going on an arms race on artificial intelligence, even as we speak. Joe Allen.
Steve, I think you hit it there with the AI arms race. And what you're seeing, all of these people that we saw, Satya Nadella, Bill Gates, and of course, Sam Altman, are involved in OpenAI, GPT, Satya Nadella as CEO of Microsoft. He's kind of the face of this. He's maybe a little bit more subdued, but what he's talking about is a total transformation of the technological landscape. And then you have Bill Gates talking about how AI will transform education, meaning that it will transform the way the younger generation thinks. And I, as I said 2 days ago, I really do think that as begin with these AIs regularly, AI will prove to be perhaps the most powerful brainwashing tool ever deployed. Maybe most importantly, though, Steve, Sam Altman, who has long talked like this, Sam Altman, who's the brains behind this, right? He's the guy overseeing the artificial intelligence development at OpenAI. Sam Altman is talking about this in terms of creating an artificial general intelligence, meaning that instead of just being a language model, the ultimate goal is to glue together all sorts of different capacities and create something like a human brain, only that human brain would be, or that human-like digital brain would be far outpacing human beings. And that's, again, how he thinks of it, how he speaks of it. And like his compadre Elon Musk, we heard him there in the fireside chat, and that was just a couple of months ago, talking about that you have to, people will basically have to merge with AI in order to keep it under control. And we all know what Elon Musk's version of that looks like, with a brain trode connecting you to AI. And maybe most strikingly, there was a lot there. Most strikingly, Sam Altman talked about how for those humans who don't want to merge with AI, perhaps there would be some kind of exclusionary zone. Human beings who want to remain normal human beings will have to remain outside of the thrust of history. And, you talk about China and how this AI arms race is international. China is also working towards artificial general intelligence. That's true of Baidu. Oh,
big time.
That's true
big
of
time.
Tencent.
Yep.
And many others. This big is an time. International AI arms race. This is
ByteDance.
Intranational.
ByteDance. This is, yeah. This is why this thing on TikTok today is, because remember, 150 million citizens of your country download this, and not just the data, it's also what they're pouring into the minds of these kids. Here's the problem with the AI and the artificial. I just want to keep reminding people, we're in the first 100 days of this since the launch in Davos, which caught all the world's elite by surprise with ChatGPT. What was it? Version 3? That was version 3. They've released 3.5. Version 4, and they got version 5 ready to go. 3.5. We're within 100 days, folks. 100 days. I want to go back. Remember, Einstein sent a letter to FDR, I think in the late 1930s. Maybe it might have been 1940. I think late 1930s for the atomic bomb. We had the atomic bomb, then the hydrogen bomb. Remember, that overwhelmed the peaceful use of nuclear power. Atomic bomb, a hydrogen bomb, when that got leaked to the Russians, they became a peer militarily. Then you had the space race with the ability to rocketry and the delivery systems, but also to get the high ground for satellites. Then you've had the bioweapons. That's the fourth big one, the bioweapons. You saw the gain of function with the bioweapons labs all over the world, of which nobody wants to talk about. Artificial intelligence. Here's the problem, trying to contain it and trying to regulate it and trying to say, hey, do you have exclusionary zones? Can we restrict it from use with children? What are the societal impacts? Because it's overwhelming even the structures and systems of government that kind of move in a certain pace. But here's what you've got, and write this down. You've got a massive arms race already to have total dominance of this technology. And that is happening in labs in China. It's happening in labs in Korea, both North and South, Eastern Europe, Russia, all over the place, Western Europe, and the United States of America. There's an arms race, and that's going to mean it's going to get out of control. You're not going to be able to control it. Not going to be able to control it. You're not going to be able to have, I mean, we don't even control biological weapons. The Biological Weapons Treaty is a joke, as you saw from the Wuhan lab. This is of the highest import Joe, we've talked about this for a couple of years, and I just want to tell people I'm pretty good at seeing how a pattern recognition. This thing, Joe, and we haven't even gotten back to the other sectors, the virgins on the singularity. They are decades and decades ahead of where people thought they would be. Is that correct, Joe Allen? You agree with that thesis that, you know, where people talked about, oh, this is going to take place in 40 or 50 years. We ain't looking at a 40 or 50 year horizon anymore, are we, sir?
You know, Steve, there's so much argument about it. I'm not as comfortable as like Ray Kurzweil, who says that 2045 is the date we can expect to see the singularity. This is a combination of them keeping back technologies from public awareness that we can only imagine. And then they're also projecting power so that they can appear to be as powerful as possible to their competitors. But I will say this. You know, Bill Gates, in his latest blog post, The Age of AI Has Begun, he talks about superintelligence, which is something that he rarely discusses, to my awareness. And he said in his post, superintelligent AIs are in our future. Compared to a computer, our brains operate at a snail's pace. Once developers can generalize a learning algorithm and run it at the speed of a computer, we will have an incredibly powerful AGI. He talks about it in terms of 10 years to a century. He's probably less confident than I am on a date, but I will say this without a doubt. This is what these people are driving for. This is where they want our civilization focused.
Yes. Yes. Okay, hang on. I'm going to keep you, Joe. We're going to take a short break. We got some housekeeping to do with some of our prominent contributors. Going to tell us things that are going on from Arizona to Texas to Capitol Hill today. Moms for Liberty are testifying. Brandon Shorewater's got a big event that's going to happen tonight in Dallas. We've got, of course, Todd Woods and the group out in Colorado Springs tomorrow night. And we've got Caroline Wren to talk about this quite fascinating turn of events in the Arizona's governor's race. With Joe Allen, all next, only in the War Room. We rejoice when there's no more. Let's
take down the CCP. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bann.
Okay, we're going to get to more of the capital markets of finance. We're doing technology, the first thing, and about how it impacts your life. Make sure you go to birchgold.com/Bannon. You've got to get the three-part series, including the debt trap. Russ Vogt's going to be on tomorrow. The prioritization of payments, which is the issue we've been pushing here, never to default on the government and not raise the debt ceiling one penny. Remember, here's what the War Room is. The War Room, we're the dead enders, right? We have to drive the stake in the ground and force people to come to us. That's the way you get change in this country, okay? And I realize we're a little hardcore sometimes, but that's just the way it's got to be. This is massively important. Because you are the chairman of the creditors committee of this net. You are the full faith and credit of the United States of America on your shoulders. Okay, the little guy. Make sure, and by the way, if you're particularly in a fixed income, yesterday what the Fed did, and they're all, you know, Ackman and these guys are going crazy. We'll talk about this 11. Ackman are going crazy. They raised it 25 basis points, right? That is, to me, the surrender. They don't really care about the inflation. They don't care if the inflation, they came out on the side of capital, not on the side of the wage earners. They do not care if this burning dumpster fire continues to burn. And that is the central issue, is how you put out the dumpster fire without taking down the banking system. First step in that, you got to stop the spending, because the spending leads to the dumpster fire inflation that crushes the bonds, therefore gives you the Biden banks, the Hoovervilles of the 21st century. Make sure you go to birchgold.com/Bannon to get the three installments, including the debt ceiling, and free information kits on thinking about you for either for your retirement account and or just, you know, for an investment opportunity to look and immerse yourself in information. Just immerse yourself in information. You got to understand this. You got to have a range of alternatives. This could be one. Just check it out. Brandon Shorewater. People are going to say, Bannon, why are you following Joe Allen's here? Why are you following Joe Allen and all this artificial intelligence and singularity and genetic engineering and CRISPR and, you know, robotic generative robotics, all of this. You keep talking about the singularity. You got Homo sapiens on this side, and you got Homo sapien plus on the other side. Why are you confusing me by bringing Brandon Showalter in? What is the connective tissue, sir, about the crusade you've led in this country about this issue of gender assignment and transhumanism? Brandon Showalter from the Christian Post.
Well, very simply, Steve, transgenderism is transhumanism. And I write about this with my co-author in our new book, Exposing the Gender Lie. We write about this with, we talk about how the transgenderism is the on-ramp to transhumanism, because think about it. Would we have thought that, 20 years ago, they would be giving children blockers to halt their natural normal puberty and then put on cross-sex hormones in pursuit of a physical impossibility? Would we have thought that would have been a thing? Well, it is no coincidence that one of the main leaders in this movement, who himself claims to be trans, Martin Rothblatt, and he's actually got a tech cult called TerraSim, where they live for, forever in biostasis, cybernetic biostasis, as Joe was referring to earlier. So this would have been inconceivable just a few years ago, but this is where this all goes. And I know that to many people, and believe me, I've felt this myself, that, oh, this is just tinfoil hat conspiracy theory, crazy talk. But no, think about it. Today we're seeing young people have, girls as young as 13 have their breasts surgically removed. We're seeing children being put on Lupron, which is a cancer drug. The pediatric version is only approved for precocious puberty. These medical atrocities are happening in pursuit of this false vision of the human person. This is a flawed anthropology that we can somehow make the human being a new thing that it has never designed or meant to be. And so if it sounds crazy, well, that seems to be precisely the point. Transgenderism is transhumanism, and it's all a lie.
And by the way, underlying both of it is money and power. Okay, there is so much money to be made in both of these. You see this in Tennessee in these situations you're seeing right now, where the medical profession is throwing away the Hippocratic Oath because there's so much money to be made. Don't forget that, Brandon. You've got an incredible event tonight. We're actually going to have it. Mo and Grace and Jane, we're going to be live streaming it on War Room and my site. Give us the details of it. Where's it going to be? Who's going to be on there? How can people in the local area want everybody to show up? Where do they go?
Well, I actually don't think we're live streaming it here, but we are definitely going to be recording it and using it for our purposes. But yes, if you go to christianpost.com/events, you can see Unmasking Gender Ideology, Protecting Children and Confronting Transgenderism. Still time to get your tickets. 7 p.m. tonight here in Dallas at First Baptist Church. It's going to be in the Truett Chapel. We've got two great panels. It's going to be an extraordinary event. They were all part of our podcast series, Generation Indoctrination, Inside the Transgender Battle. We're very proud of that podcast series. We are going to confront this issue head on. We must protect children and we must protect families.
Exposing the gender lie is free also, correct? And people
correct.
Download it.
It's a free and downloadable ebook. Yes. Free and downloadable ebook at christianpost.com/ebook/gender-lie.
Is this 7 p.m. Dallas time or 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time?
Dallas time. Yes, 7 p.m. Dallas time at First Baptist Church. Yes.
Okay, we'll get coordinated with you guys. Brandon Showalter, thank you very much. Honored to have you on here.
Thank you, Steve.
Moms for Liberty's debutante ball today at 2 p.m. on Capitol Hill. Tiffany Justice will testify. Tina Deskovich, the other co-founder. Tina, what is the opening statement about? Why is Tiffany up there? Why is Moms for Liberty in this? And as I've kind of given you guys a heads up, the Democrats are going to be full on taking shots because they see they see Moms for Liberty as a big problem, thwarting their efforts in controlling the education of our children, ma'am.
Yeah, Steve, we are excited that Tiffany has the opportunity today. The the Judiciary Committee is meeting, obviously. They have done an investigation and released a report this week. What the report has shown is that local law enforcement across the country said there was no need for the federal government to take these egregious actions of, the threat tag that they sent through the DOJ and down to the FBI to attach that threat tag to parents that were showing up at school board meetings with legitimate concerns over the last couple of years. As you know, the FBI has contacted parents across the country after speaking at school board meetings, some of our own moms, that has happened too. So Tiffany is going up there to let our side of the story be known and heard.
And that'll be 2 p.m., correct? Is roughly the committee starts then and she'll be sometime after 2?
Yeah, she gets to speak for 5 minutes with her statement, and then it's open to questions, like you said. And so she'll have to take questions from both sides of the aisle. But, you know, Tiffany is strong. We've been in this fight for a long time. We're both former school board members. And, you know, Steve, we both had to sit and listen, you know, after like Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, for example. I sat through 12-hour board meetings where parents came and we had to sit and we had to listen because that's your job. And so, you know, we've been through tough things. We've been attacked viciously for 2 years, and she is prepared and ready to take any of it head on today.
The one thing I'm quite comfortable with is that the Moms for Liberty are fighters. you can punch back. There's no doubt about that. Tina, what's your social media, your coordinates, and how do people get to Moms for Liberty?
Yeah, I hope they'll check out our social media. We'll be streaming today at 2 p.m., the whole hearing, Tiffany's portion and the entire thing. It's all Moms Number 4 Liberty on Twitter, on Facebook, on Rumble, on YouTube. You can find us Instagram, all of the places. I see on the screen right now you have our Joyful Warriors podcast, which Tiffany hosts. There's some great episodes we've been releasing from CPAC. So check us out. Please click the button, join the fight. We're growing this movement. As you know, over 2 years we've gotten to 275 chapters, and I'm proud to say as of yesterday we're in 45 states. We just brought on Alaska.
Fabulous. We're going to have it up too, so for Mo and Jane Zirkle and Grace will be doing that. Thank you very much, Tina. Look forward to the testimony today too.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate you.
The school board effort to take back the school boards, take back the administrators, change out the teachers, all tip of the spear for the parents. Nothing could be more important. Okay, Caroline Wren. Caroline Wren joins us. Caroline, we haven't had you on in a while. You've been noticeably silent on War Room, not silent anywhere else, I just duly note. Tell us about what happened. Was it a defeat? The Associated Press, everybody goes, all it carries lakes, all the headlines is everything thrown out except for one thing. Then you see the one thing, and it's a massive thing. So was this a victory, a defeat? What? Give us a status report, a sit-rep, and then where do we go from here?
Well, I would say it's the best result from any court on election day, like election integrity that we've seen. So, but that is a little bit like being the tallest midget at this point, because we've seen the courts reject these cases since 2020 and now 2022. But we are excited about the thing that they did decide to hear. I mean, it is big, and the fake news is always going to try and downplay anything in relation to Carrie Lake. But you cannot downplay Carrie Lake and her team getting the chance to look at these ballots and check the signatures. I mean, signature verification, we always said this, was the smoking gun in our case. And every judge, though, took the defendant's argument hook, line, and sinker to avoid having to actually peel back the curtain on signature verification. And we were astonished when the trial court refused to consider it. And clearly the Supreme Court disagreed. And so that is a big deal. And we had three whistleblowers who were intimately involved in the signature verification department in Maricopa County. And these folks said that they were rejecting tens of thousands of signatures, up to the tune of, I think, 130,000 ballots, and that someone was sending them through anyway. And it said one of the higher ups there. And the lower courts refused to hear this. And so now the Supreme Court is saying, no, you do need to hear it. And that is very, very big. There's still some process things that need to come out that we need to see what they're going to allow us in discovery and things like that. But we are very excited that we are going to be able to once again put people on notice and expose the fraud that happened in Arizona.
The correct me if I'm wrong, but artificial intelligence comes in this by Arizona statute and the procedures manual, you have to do this. Humans have to look at this and verify the signatures, correct? And then they use artificial intelligence just to do on some of these a quick scan. Am I correct in remembering that was one of the issues?
Yeah, I mean, the Arizona election statute is irrelevant. Katie Hobbs never even read it. That was part of the argument that they made, was that, oh, you know, they're just bringing up small process crimes. And it's like, these are the processes that you guys laid out that you are not following. And you don't get to pick and choose the processes that work for you and, like, help to elect the people you want. And there's also a lot of questions as to the humans that were checking the signature verification. Are they Republicans and Democrats? And these are things, again, that the court would not even allow us to bring forward. And the Supreme Court is now saying, no, you can. And even thinking back during the Arizona audit, like, they fought tooth and nail to hide these envelopes because they knew that they would not stand up to any scrutiny. And we've seen some examples of these signatures, Steve, and it's chicken scratch. It's illegible scrawls, and it's absurd. And they've been passing them through at a margin that is absolutely more than the margin of victory in this election. And think about right now, with Kerry 16,000 votes, 17,000 votes separating, and Abe Hamadeh is less than 300. And so this is a massive, massive deal, and it's important. And Maricopa County does not care about process. And the way they described this process was patently absurd anyway. Their timeline was off. If they actually would have gone through and done signature verification, it would have required them to verify signature every 8 seconds. And that would have been with people working overtime. It's humanly impossible to do. But Maricopa County is lying about this. They're lying about everything in regard to signature verification. And they've been lying about it since 2020. And we're going to have our day in court on it.
Carolyn, hang on, because if people remember in this fight, one thing the Maricopa County officials went more than nuts on was not to get the signature verification into the discussion. They fought it tooth and nail. Short break. Carolyn Wren, we got Joe Allen still with us. All next in the War Room. We rejoice when there's no more.
Let's take down the CCP. Twitter has arrived. The new social media taking on big tech, protecting free speech, and canceling cancel culture. Join the marketplace of ideas. The platform for independent thought has arrived. Superior technology. No more selling your personal data. No more censorship. No more cancel culture. Enough. Getter has arrived. It's time to say what you want, the way you want. Download now.
Okay, if you have Getter, you can see, you know, all the coverage we do, all the additional coverage we do, all the additional shows we do, and, of course, my nonstop posting and all the contributors. So it's a great information tool for you. It's a weapon. Make sure you use it. It's totally free. If I can use it, and I'm an idiot in this stuff, and actually post my own things with very little help or no help, you will be able to. Also, MyPillow.com, promo code War Room. You can tell today, I got like 2 hours of sleep last night, but I wouldn't even be able to do the show if it was not for the products of MyPillow. Those great pillows, MyPillow, the 2.0s are unbelievable. Of course, all the other products. Go to MyPillow.com, promo code War Room, right there on the square. You get the buy one, get one free. You got the big inventory clearance of sales. You got it all. And if you want to be energized, even with very little sleep, use the products of MyPillow. Go check it out today. So, Caroline, I just want to go back and reemphasize, there was nothing, and particularly for the audience, maybe didn't follow it as closely as the Arizona race, which was vitally important and super important for 2024. We got to win Arizona. These people went nuts. This is where they try to throw you and Kerry into jail, right? Wasn't it? They're trying to come out. I mean, they are so petrified on the scam of the mail-in ballots and the signatures that are not related to the whoever filled out the ballot, not related to the person that's registered to vote. Caroline Wren.
Oh yeah, I mean, after the whistleblowers from the signature verification process in Maricopa County came forward saying they were pressured to approve bad signatures. A deposition was put out for the assistant elections director, I think Sela Naber. And then the attorneys were informed that she was no longer employed by Maricopa County and that all efforts to track her down had been unsuccessful. Like, that's beyond suspicious. And then don't forget, Steve, it was the issue of signature verification that led to cartel lawyer in the Secretary of State's office, Adrian Fontes, to refer Kerry Lake to Chris Mays, the illegitimate attorney general, for prosecution. Like, because Kerry tweeted out, if you remember, a few different pictures of signatures not matching, and they referred her for criminal. She currently is being referred for criminal prosecution for doing that. And her Twitter account shared a publicly available information that had been live streamed and submitted into the public record at the Arizona State Senate. And Fontes Adrian Fontes wants her thrown in jail for that. And you know why that was or is? It's because Fontes was the Maricopa County recorder for 2018 and 2020. He knows exactly what the signature verification process looks like, and he's terrified that the rest of us are going to find out. And now, because of this ruling, we will.
Walk us through the timing of this. What's the course? What's the critical path here?
We don't know. The court did not say because it was in the past filings. It says this needs to be expedited, and that was not clear. So we're gonna have to wait for further details to come out. Right now, obviously, our attorneys are looking through everything. We're disappointed that we're not going to get to hear on the merits of the other things. Although we do feel like we laid out an excellent case at the trial court level. A lot of people were watching that, and so we're putting all these people on notice. But this is why it is so important that Carrie Lake fights when others won't be willing to. Every single thing matters. Bringing these signature verifications back to the trial court, that could be the difference for the Republican nominee in 2024 and cleaning up these processes. And it takes fighters like Carrie Lake, and the Republican Party needs to wake up and fight. I was thinking this morning about there's a Wisconsin Supreme Court race happening right now that we're not really paying attention to. The Democrats are dumping millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into this race. And like these seats matter. These positions matter. This is how they're taking our country from us. And we got to wake up and we have to play the game and fight fire with fire that the Democrats are playing. And Carrie Lake is the biggest fighter we have.
The most important election in 2023 is Wisconsin on 4 April. We're going to try to get Scott Pressler on. If not today, then this afternoon. We're covering this thing, and it is big league important. And right now it's a dogfight up there. The Democrats put tons of money. Caroline, it's important enough you've decamped from Mar-a-Lago, and you're on-scene commander out in Arizona. We thank you for that. And remember, Caroline wanted to take down her many appearances on War Room because she said she was getting too much fan mail. So hopefully we'll kick it back up again. What's your social media, Caroline?
It's at Caroline Wren on Twitter, Gitter, Truth, anywhere. And then if you want to read more about our case, go to SaveArizonaFund.com.
Caroline Wren, thank you. Honored to have you on here. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Carrie Lake fights on. By the way, prayers for Carrie Lake's sister. She's had a quite serious medical problem. It's one of the reasons Carrie is all over helping her sister today. Really want her prayers to go out for her sister's health. Sister's a great person out there in Arizona with us. So make sure you have prayers for Carrie's sister. Joe Allen, remember that they tried to use the AI in the Arizona thing. They could not meet the requirements of having humans do it, right? And see another situation AI. But I want to go back. We got a couple of minutes here. Brandon Showalter, is this gender assignment? Is that the on ramp to transhumanism, sir?
You know, when Showalter was talking about Martine Rothblatt, it's really, really important. I think if the audience looks into Rothblatt, I've written a bit about Rothblatt. That is a flashpoint for where transgenderism and transhumanism connect. But there's really a couple of different strains, though. You have a sort of heteronormative transhumanism that wants to become as, you know, digitally and hormonally masculine for men and the same femininity for women. There's a wide variety, but there's absolutely that strain that sees a direct connection between their transgender sort of projects and the future of transhumanism. I think too, Steve, just the idea that technology can be used to fundamentally alter a human being, without a doubt, transgenderism is a sort of a test phase for that. Because you see not only adults doing this, you see first the culture change and the culture change among the young. And then after that, you get this widespread transformation that is facilitated by the biomedical establishment. And when you come to a point where people are uncomfortable with it or furious about it or disgusted with the whole process, then suddenly those people who are uncomfortable are shoved to the side and made to be seen as villains when they, in fact, are the only heroes.
Joe, give us your coordinates, brother.
That's jobot.xyz, warroom.org under the transhumanism tab, and Gitter and Twitter at @JoeBotxyz. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you, brother. Great hour. Okay, 90 seconds. Cortez, the economy, and you, all next.